So, guess what I'm wearing in 2018? Google Glass. Yes, I've just reset everything up, which involves installing the very old Google Glass companion app, which is ancient and looks disgusting with ICS stylings. Anyway,
is any of that actually work? Like, what are we on, XE23, I think, still? Two or three years later?
That sounds about right. Remember that compatibility update last year? Something like that. That, like,
oh,
crazy
yeah.
Update.
Yeah, I forgot about that. It was very random, and people thought that... Well, it came out around the same time that Google publicized Enterprise Edition.
Yeah.
So maybe it had something to do with that.
I think you said that they were finishing work up or something, like pieces. I think that was you.
Yeah, I don't remember at this point. I mean, I've finally moved past reporting on Glass, which it took me like 4 years, but I finally decided to grow up a little bit and move on.
Grow up a little. So it's the person with Glass Enterprise right now, I believe.
Well, actually, I just had to ship it back recently, so, yeah, I mean, I was expecting them to just let me keep it, because, I mean, it's not like this thing is that expensive. I mean, businesses are buying these in batches of hundreds, so I thought maybe this partner company would let me keep mine, but nope. A year later, they pestered me. They didn't even just ask once, they asked, like, three times, and, they paid...
You were serious about it.
Yeah, and they paid for that international FedEx shipping, which was, like, $100 or something, so apparently they were really serious about getting their property back.
Oh, I'm sure that there was a one customer that just needed one more, and they just had to refurbish yours to get it there in time.
Yeah, I guess so, something like that. So this week was, in related news, spectacles too, huh?
Yes, I am crazily excited about this. Okay, spectacles too. The first ones didn't sell very well.
That's an understatement.
But as somebody pointed out, what Snapchat cares more about is the metrics, and apparently most people didn't use them after a month. And Spectacles 2 is improving on it by... So they're a bit more stylish, in my opinion. There's like a frosted frame, and there's like a cool effect on the stem of the glasses. It's the camera is higher resolution, the transfer speeds are faster apparently, and it finally takes pictures. This is like the one thing I've always wanted, to take pictures, because I have like this crazy dream of using like adding prescription lenses to these, and then just using it as like a work tool, when if there's something interesting, I take a picture of it and then import that picture into Keep and like add a reminder and like make a total system based on spectacles.
Yeah, I think there's I think there's something magical about that, just like being able to take photos and videos in first person. I remember seeing that very first Google Glass promotional video, and just thinking it was so magical. And Spectacles is kind of like the only living product right now that kind of continues that dream, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's why I have Glass, testing out the camera, seeing how this workflow would work. It would be really cool if I like could get Spectacles 2 in time for I.O. and just like document it that way.
Yeah, but you know what the problem with Spectacles is
Snapchat.
Yeah, you got to use Snapchat. And that's why I literally don't care about them at all, because I've never used Snapchat, and I probably won't. I mean, it's weird. I never thought that I would feel like I'm too old. But I feel like everyone my age and younger is just like, this is their primary social network. And I feel like I'm assuming the same way, you know, our parents may have felt when we were getting on Facebook or MySpace or whatever. I kind of feel that way. I mean, I feel out of touch, and it's weird because in general with technology, you know, neither of us are out of touch. You don't use Snapchat either, do you?
No, because I don't know why. I just feel okay, on Android, it's a horrible experience. The UI is slow.
Oh, yeah, that's true,
it
for sure.
Slow everywhere. It's just not good. But from a social standpoint, I like texting people.
Yeah, I like texting and messaging and...
messaging, yeah.
Yeah. To me, I just don't really get the whole ephemeral messaging thing. I don't get it. It just doesn't click with me.
I want to keep my memories.
Right. It's weird to me. It feels like I'm wasting time if something's just going to disappear. It makes me feel like my relationships are more disposable, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I've just never really clicked with the whole disappearing content thing.
It's like the beauty of the unlimited cloud storage these days is you can 10 years from now you can come back and see what you're doing, and I think that's very cool. Life logging is awesome.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that, and I think there's something to the whole concept of, the genuine aspect of capturing what's happening in your life in real time, and spectacles is kind of the epitome of that,
mm-hmm.
Capturing the literal what's happening to you, or what you're doing, in just your normal life, but I guess I would rather just live my life with other people around me in person than project that to a couple hundred followers of people I, may not be really that close friends with. On that note, I just thought we would welcome everyone to the show. This is Alphabet Scoop. And for those who are just now tuning in, this is a podcast from us at 9to5 Google, where we just cover everything about Google that's covered, everything that happened in the Google world for the week. So thanks for joining us. And as the show's name implies, we'll do our best to throw in some rumors and things we've heard from people close to the Mountain View company whenever we can. Today we're going to talk about a few big topics, one being the new Gmail rollout that happened this week, right, Abner?
Yeah, 12 a.m. rollout, to be specific.
Oh, the best kind.
Indeed. So a few weeks ago, Google announced to its administrative partners that a new Gmail experience is coming out, and hours later, the full thing was completely leaked. And 2 weeks later, it's available for everybody. So this new Gmail takes the best parts of Inbox, like Smart Reply and the ability to snooze messages, and brings it to Gmail proper, finally. Features-wise, there is... brain fart. Okay. Features-wise, the big focus of this is letting you do more without leaving the inbox. So the main home view has this clever hovering buttons. So you can hover over a message to archive, delete, mark as read, snooze, my favorite, and yours as well.
Absolutely.
And this is just such a quick time saver rather than having to manually select an email and then go to the top bar. It is so great. This is my favorite change. Meanwhile, there are inline image attachments from Drive, and regular pictures that people send you. And there's also this brand new side panel, which are basically widgets for Google Calendar, for Google Keep, and the new Google Tasks, which I'm sure we'll talk about in just a second. But before that, other features coming with snoozing, the ability to have a message come back to your inbox at a specified time, is something called nudging. This is an intelligent feature that Gmail is pushing, and basically if you sent something 5 days ago and you haven't gotten a reply, it'll remind you to maybe follow up with this person, or if somebody sent you something 3 days ago and you haven't touched it, it'll also push you to maybe actually open the email. So more business features, enterprise features, which is the true aim for this product really, is a confidential mode, which may come to regular users. So basically, you can turn on this confidential mode and it'll disable forwarding, printing, and copying, as well as the ability to self-delete the email after a few days. Look at that, ephemeral messaging coming to Gmail. That's a big work feature. Another one is this cool two-factor authentication, where the recipient has to get a code sent to them before they can open the email to make sure that it's really them. So that's kind of cool. There's also new security warnings that are easier to understand and more prominent, bright red. And in July, I believe, it's getting native offline support. So you'd be able to search, you'd be able to reply. So when you sync back, everything will be saved. So that's a neat feature. That's a bit like Android app-like. So what do you think about this after using for a good few days now?
My initial impression after, you know, it came out, and I think it was about a few hours before I saw the option pop up in my inbox, and I clicked that, and I enabled the new design, and my first impression after using it for a few hours was just how familiar it feels. We can talk more about the design, I guess, a little bit later, but I was just struck by how much I think, like, it's for anyone who's coming to this new design, you know, from using the old one for probably like, what, 5 to 10 years at this point. I mean, it hasn't really changed that much since it came out. Yeah. There have been a few.
Solid 5 years.
Yeah, there have been a few bigger kind of refreshes, but nothing like this, I don't think. And I think for those that are coming from the traditional design, they're not really going to feel that jarred. And that's a big deal, I think. You know, Facebook does something as little as change a notification icon or the location of the settings menu or something. My parents would freak out. And I think that Gmail, obviously they waited a long time before they push this out. I mean, this has probably been in the works for a couple of years, this redesign. And it's, like I mentioned, it's been a slow crawl of Google services kind of coming over. And I think they were very conservative and very wise and very smart about how they redesigned things and also how they rolled it out. And so I would recommend anyone who doesn't have it to just enable it, because it's functionally identical and better, as you just described, all these new features. It's overall just an improvement, and I don't have any complaints. I've seen some people complain about the Google Sans headlines and emails, or the general use of Google Sans. That's been a pretty divisive topic. Again, we can talk more about that later, but to me, the big features are snooze and smart reply. I don't really care about the rest of it, honestly, as an everyday user. Most of those things are niche use cases or just not that important to my workflow. But Smart Reply, I've already used it like 10 times this week and glad to have that in Gmail. One of the things that was keeping me in inbox for the longest time. And then snoozing, again, so something that was keeping me in inbox, and I'm fine. I don't need inbox anymore, at least. I've said in previous episodes, using inbox is kind of a psychological thing for me, and having those features in Gmail is going to let me just use the main Gmail client from now on, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, like you said, Google is very thoughtful about this update. All the features from the past are here now. They took their time. They didn't rush it. They made sure all its feature complete, because due to how important Gmail is as a product. And I agree with you. As you mentioned at the top, the design plays a big role in this new Gmail. And in our hands-on, I I quickly noted that material design, a refreshed material design, is the cornerstone of this update, in my opinion. Because while the main functionality of how Gmail works, the user experience, hasn't changed, Google isn't trying to force a new inbox management system on you. It's the same thing. But there's so many design tweaks here that make this new Gmail feel new and modern and just fit right in with every other Android app. This would be an amazing Android tablet app if those existed, which they don't. But this is such a good Android-like experience on the web, in my opinion. It's solid, it's fast. The animations are absolutely delightful. Like, my favorite thing is going to the hamburger button in the top left corner to slide out this nav drawer, and when the nav drawer is minimized and you hover over it, the animation is just so cool. Like, it's a bubble. It pops out.
Yeah, my favorite thing is, you mentioned it in the show notes here, hovering for archive, delete, mark as read, and snooze. That's just, like, so awesome to me. And I've used it so much since I moved over to the new design. Especially, you know, just quickly going through my email and archiving, instead of having to check those checkboxes on the left side and then press the archive button at the top, which you can still do. And that's another thing to note about the design is that all of the primary functionality that we've been using in Gmail for many, many years is all exactly in the same place. They didn't really move anything around. And I think that, you know, people who are very habitual about using this platform and this app they're really going to appreciate that.
Okay, so another big part of this Gmail update is Google Tasks, a standalone to-do client from Google that is finally maybe going to consolidate all their disparate efforts. So right now there's reminders in Google Calendar, there's reminders in the Google app, there's of course assistant reminders, and with Google Tasks, it definitely seems like where Google's going is to combine everything in Tasks. I say that because Google considers Tasks a part of G Suite, so that's really a sticking point where customers can expect to keep using this long into the future. So that's a very good promise from them. And hopefully it means that Google's consolidating around Tasks from the assistant, the calendar, and all this other stuff I mentioned. So in Gmail, in the new web Gmail, you can just drag an email to Google Tasks and it'll make an automatic reminder, which is super useful.
Yeah, if you don't remember, Google also tried to put its tasks or to-dos in line in Inbox as well. They would appear in line with other emails because they treated Inbox like a big to-do list. So they tried putting them there too.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Do you remember if it worked at like the assistant ones?
Yeah,
or the
it was tied in with ones? Yeah, it was tied in with the assistant ones. So whenever I would say, you know, hot word, remind me to feed my dog every day or something, that reminder would show up in my inbox, in Google Inbox.
That's pretty sweet. So far, Tasks does not have that assistant integration yet, which has earned it a lot of criticism, a lot of fair criticism, but I would argue that it's early days, Google's favorite phrase, and it'll get more updates, so just wait. And these complaints are definitely going to galvanize Google into making sure they keep updating Tasks repeatedly, so it's a good stepping stone for the future.
Yeah, it feels like to me that Tasks and Keep are making them two distinct products. I think a lot of people used Keep as a to-do list, and I think now Google is trying to say, yeah, Keep is good, but it's like more for just little notes you want to keep on the side, you know, taking notes. And then Tasks is now going to be, it seems like, Google's centerpiece for to-dos in general across the ecosystem. And so, yeah, I agree. I think we could see tasks integrated across Assistant and elsewhere in Android as well.
Mm-hmm. But one complaint is, why aren't tasks and keep the same thing? Because they're basically streams of notes. You can add notes and subtasks to tasks. So why aren't they the same thing? That's.
I just think that they're different things because they are different things. I mean, if you're taking a note of, you know, something that, you know, like for instance, a grocery list or something. Is a grocery list really a task? Is that a to-do list item? Is a grocery list? No, a grocery list is more of just a note. It's like the notes app on iOS. It's like, this is just for a quick place to jot down reminders or you know, things that you're just trying to take note of for whatever reason. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, jotting down someone's address or their phone number or whatever, you know, there's plenty of use cases there. And then, which you can use that, you could use Keep as a to-do list because, like I said, people do that, you can. But I think that it makes sense for Google to have a separate offering for things that are...
A dedicated product.
Right, a dedicated product for things that are, like, actually tasks that you need to get accomplished by a certain time, and I think that would tie in well with Calendar.
I wonder if Google Keep's going to lose that reminder functionality. If Google really wants to make this a consistent experience and set out that this is for notes, this is for your reminders.
Yeah, that'll be that's possible, for sure. It's definitely possible.
So that's the Gmail and the Tasks news, but there's also a tidbit of Google Inbox news. I believe Google told the Wall Street Journal that Inbox is going to be updated.
So yeah, iPhone 10 support for Inbox is on the way. And I think this might be confusing to some people because, you know, there's been a lot of speculation that maybe Google's killing off Inbox with moving a lot of its features over to Gmail proper. And it's kind of seeming like Inbox is kind of a test bed. Some have guessed that, okay, maybe Inbox is going to stick around, but maybe Google's going to use it as a test bed for new features for Gmail, which is basically come to find out what they've been doing. But I mentioned this on Twitter, I think Inbox is actually going to see the end soon because I've been told that it has about a year or apparently internal roadmaps are showing that Inbox has about a year of life support. So I wouldn't take Google adding iPhone 10 support, which is probably a trivial addition. Honestly, it's probably a pretty trivial change to make. Although Google said it was less trivial than some of the other apps, which is why it's taken so long to come to Inbox for iOS. But I wouldn't take that as kind of, you know, debunking the thoughts and opinions of those that are saying that Inbox is on the way out. But because I do think it actually is on the way out. For, you know, I love Inbox, but, you know, as I said, its two big features were moved to Gmail now, so I'm fine without it. And so I really do think.
The thing with Inbox being killed, so Google said the day before this Gmail announcement that Inbox is going to be the test bed of features and that the more popular ones are going to Gmail. But the central premise of Inbox is more than just where Google dumps experiments. At the time when they first announced it, the central premise of Inbox was a new way to manage your inbox, to never delete, always archive. And in that vein, Inbox has completely failed because most people are still using Gmail. And it's clear that except for a small majority, that different way of dealing with emails has never really went mainstream. So yes, they might say that Inbox is a testbed for experimenting on new features, but at the end of the day, its core premise failed, its core mission failed. So unless they're going to retool Inbox for a true experimental nature, I don't think it has too much of a lifespan. too much of a priority at Google.
Yep, I think you put it really well. Kind of tying back to what we were talking about earlier, though, a big part of Inbox's redesign is, as you use the word, cornerstone, is really material design. And I think there's been a lot of confusion about material design and what direction Google's taking here. I mean, kind of tying in Inbox here, we know Inbox was kind of like, for some, the material design redesign of Gmail. Like, Gmail on the web has been stuck in the Stone Age for years. And when Inbox came out, for those that were really wanting to jump on the material design train, you could use the Inbox web client for a while. Well, you still can today. And it had the fresh kind of design of the new Gmail, you know, years ago. But anyway, with Material Design 2, we can call it Material Design 2. We can talk more about why it's named that, or what exactly is going on with the name. but really what Google's doing with Material Design 2, as I described, I had an article this week, basically trying to...
A very good explainer.
Yeah, not to toot my own horn, but I think it was a pretty good explainer of just... tying together all of the evidence we've seen of what the trends are looking like based on our teardowns, based on apps that Google's released, based on new versions of web applications like Google Pay, for instance, that have come out kind of quietly, that they sport kind of designs that are unfamiliar and look a little bit new and modern. And I've tried to piece together all of the bits and pieces of evidence we have to summarize what it is that Google's doing with this new design language. And I'll just hit all the bullet points real quick. One being white space and translucency. Translucency is something that goes all the way back to the launch of the Google Pixel 2. And later with Android P, we're starting to see this, you know, see-through windows and stuff and backgrounds, which is when I remember picking up the Pixel 2 at the October event and being pretty jarred at the fact that I was using an Android phone that had translucency. white space and translucency, colorful icons as we saw.
I remember that. I personally thought it was burn-in, if you remember that.
Yeah, I was really confused because, you know, there was a couple things happening at the same time. There was the blue tint shift with the Pixel 2 XL display, and then there was the translucent white backgrounds on the app drawer and on the feed in Google. The
quick settings.
And in quick settings too. And so I was kind of jarred because I was seeing two different things at the same time that seemed weird. You know, the blue shift and then the translucency, and together it felt like Google had made some kind of crazy departure with this design that we weren't aware of. But it turned out to be half of it was just translucency, which, you know, if you change the background, I guess what I'm trying to say is we had on the very first Pixel 2 XL that I picked up, it had a blue background. And so there was blue shining through the translucency. And then when you tilted the phone, I was having on that particular demo model that Google was letting us touch at the event, really bad blue shift. And so I was like, what the heck is wrong with this phone? It's so weird. But yeah, come to find out, it's just translucency on the app drawer and, you know, elsewhere. And then, you know, the blue shift. And so I was just kind of taken aback. But I guess now looking back with quote Material Design 2, you know, showing up, that was the first little bits and pieces of evidence that Google was working on a fresh new take on the whole paper and ink metaphor. So yeah, white space, that's a big one. Translucency, colorful icons like we saw in the settings app for the Android P developer preview. You can check that out on 95google.com if you want to see those screenshots. Google Sans, which I don't know if this has really been reported, and maybe we should turn this into a formal report, but Google seems to be using a slightly tweaked, maybe, I don't know if it's actually tweaked or if it's different, but it's named differently. Google uses Product Sans and has for a couple years now for all of its primary product logos, including the Google logo on the Google website or the Google homepage. and, you know, across all of its services. And then they apparently now have Google Sans, which is basically the same font, but it's called Google Sans, and all of the apps and you know, using Inspect Element on the websites that are using this, you can see that it's called Google Sans, not Product Sans. So that's an interesting thing. We're seeing Google Sans pop up in apps. Google I/O 2018 app is probably the main culprit right now. Also tasks, and also headers for emails in the new Gmail design, which I mentioned earlier. And then rounded corners, rounded everything. Rounded corners, rounded tab indicators, rounded selection highlights and menus. Just round. Everything's round. For whatever reason, I mean, and I guess you could argue that the first evidence of round as a primary design element, obviously, floating action buttons have been around along, and those are little circles. But we know with the Pixel that Google started introducing circular app icons in the app drawer. So that's probably one of the earlier evidences that rounded design was becoming more prominent, and that's definitely come to a T with Android P and with this so-called Material Design 2. And then finally is the bottom app bar, which we're told is going to be very key for Google in the next year or coming years, coming months, that all of Google's primary apps are all going to go kind of to having most of the main controls and navigation on the bottom of the display, because phones are getting big. And I guess that just makes logical sense.
Yeah, Google started on that design trend with the Pixel 2 launcher, removing the search bar below. And honestly, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
As you said, big phones are harder to reach.
Yeah, how do you feel about, like, you know, white space and just, like, everything that's happening with Material Design 2?
On white space, I am the biggest proponent there is of dark themes, and I hope we have an option, just at least a darker version, because it is very bright, it is very stark, it is very white.
Yeah, I saw someone say that the new brighter look, I guess, the more white space actually might make it easier to adopt a dark theme across Android or in Android apps, because with traditional Material Design, it's color everywhere, you know, lots of shadows and lots of papery kind of textures and stuff, and that's a lot harder to just invert, you know. But with white space everywhere, you can just invert everything, and, you know, black backgrounds with lighter text, and so maybe your dreams will come true in the coming years.
I do the color. I'm slightly worried about the color direction though, because again, white versus the material's previous heavy use of tints. Looking at the Google I/O 18 app, maybe not all is not lost, because it uses a very prominent blue tinted bottom bar and the nav bar. So maybe there's hope there, but like, this Google I/O 18 app is such a good example of white everywhere with just minimal blue accents to make everything stand out.
Yeah, another place we're seeing new material design, and there's a lot of places that we're seeing new material design, is Chrome Canary recently, which we're seeing, I guess the most obvious change is the rounded tabs, which to me, I joked on Twitter, look like upside down iPhone notches.
I missed that tweet. But yeah, this Sunday, we spotted that Chrome Canary had enabled something that it calls a refresh to Material Design. And on Windows, this is already live on Windows, it had the top bar of Chrome, so the tabs, the Omni address bar, that all gets a refresh. So the tabs themselves, as you said, are like upside down notches, they're very round. The address bar is also rounded on the left and right. And the look is it's jarring. For some reason, looks very weird in Chrome in a way that it looks fine for me in Gmail. Maybe because Gmail at least tries to be a bit more familiar. Well, in my opinion, the Chrome is just going for a different look, a different jarring look from what we've known.
Yeah, I think I agree. And I think it's another thing to think about, though, is that it wasn't that long ago that Chrome itself, the browser, kind of got some tweaks that made it look more, more material.
Yeah, it's a slow process. It's honestly still ongoing. They're updating the major parts, and then right now, even with the latest Chrome 66, they're still updating small menus, pop-ups, layouts, that kind of thing. It's a very slow process.
Yeah, one example I think of is Chrome earlier on didn't have the tab design. It wasn't like these very sharp corners, was it? I think it was more rounded originally in the earlier days.
I vaguely remember that. So yeah, the thing about what we're calling Material Design 2 is that these changes are coming super close together. On Saturday, we were able to activate some more material design in the Google app. And on the next day, Chrome Canary was spotted with these changes. Then immediately after that, during the week, we saw Play Services, Gmail, and then the Google I.O. app and Google Tasks, which I think are the best two examples of changes. So yeah, this is happening very quickly, and all roads leading up to Google I.O. 18 at this moment. So something is happening, and I hope we get a formal announcement and explanation of this new design philosophy at the developer conference.
Yeah, me too. I think it might be confusing for those that haven't been keeping an eye on it, but you know, for those of us that are tracking app updates all the time, I think a lot of these changes are very apparent. You know, it's a lot easier for us to see, you know, the trends, to see, okay, this is a new design element that we have not seen in, you know, last couple of years, that, oh, okay, we saw it in this app a couple months ago, we didn't have an explanation for it, but now it's popping up in this app and this app and on this website. And so, yeah, like you're saying, it's there's no formal name for it. I mean, I think internally it's being called Material Design 2, just, you know, because it is a natural evolution of what Google's been doing. From what I've been told, the name isn't going to change. This is just Material, and this is just the next evolution. I think one of the Google I/O sessions actually calls it says something like the latest evolution of Material Design or something like that. I'm not quoting that directly, but something says that something like that. And I think that's how Google's going to approach it. I think Google's going to show maybe a demo reel or something of, you know, this is what, you know, things are going to, this
next?
Is what's next. And they're going to, I think, as far as I've heard, there are internal guidelines for this newer refreshed look. And I think that on I.O., you know, I think I.O., which is obviously a developers conference primarily, would be great timing for Google to unveil or to make public the guidelines for all of this. But like I've said many times, some of these things, like bottom app bar, which is a material component, went public all the way back at the launch of Android P developer preview. So some of these things are already public, but you know, material design is just a constantly changing, constantly evolving thing, and for all we know, things could change just as much next year.
It's constantly changing. And to add briefly, on like a philosophical standpoint, material design was always a living, breathing document. I believe Matthias Duarte said that the guidelines, that the material guidelines are constantly changing, and that it's a living document. So, as what you were saying about material design to as a name, it really doesn't make sense to attach a number, to append a number to it. Because for Google, it's material design was always meant to change, to stay up to date with the times. So again, maybe Material Design 2 is just an internal name, but at the end of the day, to Google, what Google wants is for just people to refer to it as material. and to be the latest thing associated with Google's look.
Yeah, there's a whole conversation to be had about you know, whether or not this new refreshed kind of language that we're seeing lately is deserving of the name Material, considering Material originally was kind of referring to the paper and ink metaphor, which is seemingly disappearing as the days go by. But yeah, like you said, Google's goal is really for just Material to grow and mature, and I think that's happening. And so I'm excited for I/O and to see what they announce. Next up, we have Play Music, which is kind of
controversial
and a little bit of a mess. Droid Life this week came out with a report that Google Play Music is on the chopping block and on its way out, and to be replaced by YouTube, what, well, they call it YouTube Remix, but we're told that YouTube Remix is simply the name of the team / idea.
The combined YouTube right. Music and Play Music teams.
Right. And I guess this service that they're working on to replace Play Music, Droid Life reported that 2018 will be the year that Google pushes everyone on Play Music over to YouTube Music. And I don't know if that's the case. I think this is really complicated, and I think it's something that we have to unpack. And I think we might learn more at I/O, I'm not sure. But basically, YouTube Music is Google's, I guess, next attempt at doing basically what they did with Play Music. And they want to take on Apple Music and Spotify, obviously. And Google has said itself that a big part of being successful in this space is to unify its offerings and bring Play Music and YouTube Music together into one cohesive product. And I think it goes without saying that Play Music hasn't exactly dominated the industry. I mean, Spotify and Apple Music are killing it, I think, in subscriber numbers. I don't know if we have hard data on that, but I think YouTube Music is Google trying to take this brand, which is a ubiquitous household name. Unfortunately, you know, as some people have pointed out, it's typically associated with video and less music, YouTube. But I think that they're smart to use a name that's already a public, you know, a public household or a very ubiquitous household name to try and go into this market again.
And for one thing, people are only using YouTube for music. Like, there's an entire younger generation where their idea of listening to music is just keeping YouTube on in the background with autoplay. And that's the streaming service for them.
Yeah, but the thing is with this transition, though, is that
Google wants it to be a paid service. They want to get those people into paying subscribers, much like how Apple Music and Spotify have successfully done for their offerings.
Right, exactly. And then there's another aspect of things that it kind of gets complicated with, you know, this news of Google killing off Play Music eventually. It confuses some people who are daily users of Play Music now, because they may use the Play Music app as, you know, offline playback of songs they've purchased on the Play Store, or they may use it for streaming, you know, the tracks that they own that they've uploaded to Play Music. And so there's lots of features.
That's the key right there.
Yeah, there's lots of features that are not in the YouTube Music app. And I think Google's working to, you know, build up YouTube Music to have the equivalent and all the same features that Play Music has. But then you take that to the logical conclusion of, okay, let's say every single feature that's in the Play Music app gets added to the YouTube Music app, and Google makes this transition and forces everyone over. What happens? So does the Play Music app as a whole, does it go away? And if that's the case, I feel like Play Music is like the most successful of all the play fill in the blank apps, you know, Play Games, Play Newsstand. It would be weird for the most popular one to disappear and then the other ones stick around.
Yeah, it would be weird for the Google Play Store to not have a music offering?
Oh yeah, totally. You know, is would it look like all of like what's the goal here? Is the Play Store gonna still sell tracks? I would assume so. I would assume that Google wants to maintain this direct iTunes competitor. But then again, I this is all short term because I think in the long term, if just philosophically, I think people are moving away from owning music and owning video content, and people are doing more and more streaming. So I guess overall the point is there's a lot more questions than there are answers with this.
Yeah, the Play branding, it made sense in the age of iTunes where there was a one-to-one competitor, but these days Netflix, streaming services for movies and TV shows, music is what everybody's talking about right now, but next might be Play Movies. What is the future of Play Movies when YouTube Movies and YouTube has the exact same functionality and YouTube is the one offering making original content and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's another good point.
But that's the talk for the future.
Right. That's another good point, though, is that Play Movies and TV offers movies and television show rentals, and so does YouTube. And I'm pretty sure...
Yeah, it's the exact same backend. You can watch one thing from the other.
Right. And I'm pretty sure that people use the YouTube side more than they use the Play Movies and Game side. So, taking this to a logical conclusion, you know... Play Movies and Game or Play Movies and TV, if that goes away because it's easily replaced by YouTube equivalents, which it already is, and then Play Music, if that goes away and is replaced by YouTube equivalents, it seems like the Play branding as a whole starts to fall apart, doesn't it? Isn't that kind of the feel you get from this whole situation?
The end goal could be that Play just becomes the phrase for Android apps and games, which it makes sense, I guess. But that means you have to... There's Play Books, which just recently added audiobooks. That might throw a wrench into whether or not Google's commit to the Play branding, because they just did a major launch on audiobooks. And it's a really good product. It's a solid offering, solid service, solid implementation. So... Yeah, it's very... Because Google, at the end of the day, they have two media offerings. And it's a battle of whether this Play brand is stronger than the YouTube brand. And honestly, I don't think so. I don't think the Play team can justify its existence when YouTube is this behemoth, this cultural behemoth, that is in the same vein as iTunes, as Spotify.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and one that I've not seen anyone else pick up, is that maybe the Play brand makes sense more as an entertainment brand for apps and games. Maybe that makes a lot of sense, because we do know Google just redesigned the Play Games app. It seems like Google's kind of taking a second shot at pushing Play Games a little bit. It's one of the few apps that has this new material design look. And then another aspect that I forgot to mention is that podcasts in the Play, it seems like Google's shifting its focus on podcasts this week with three stories that were pushed through to the media, that they're really doubling down on this standalone podcast app, which is within the Google app. It just seems like they're moving everything out of the Play brand, at least as far as we can tell. Maybe you're right. Maybe I don't see the Play Store. I don't see that name changing, because it's that is, you know, everyone uses the Play Store app, and it seems to be a pretty strong brand as a hub for downloading apps and games. You know, like, it's the equivalent of finding the app on the App Store. There's the App Store and there's the Play Store. And I think that brand is pretty well successful and accepted at this point in popular culture. But that's what people associate the Play brand with. They associate it with a app store. They don't associate it with as much a music service. And even though they've had Google Play Music around for a long time, I think people probably associate YouTube more with listening to music than they do the Google Play Music brand. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Again, speaking to the generational aspect, YouTube is what they listen for music. Most I would venture to say that most younger people, they don't buy songs, they don't download songs legally at least, and they don't really need an app that plays audio, that plays actual audio files that they can control and manage on their phone anymore, because it's moving to streaming, and that is a good bet for Google to follow. The question is, the rest of us, the people who, like me, love the music locker in Google Play Music so much, and how Google is going to treat those customers. Because if Google pisses these lawyers, these people who pay for the premium service, who use that cloud locker, they can find themselves with a large mass of people switching to Spotify because all their favorite lockdown features are gone. There's no investment, there's no commitment to the platform anymore. So they have to really walk this tight rope in making sure that YouTube Music, like Gmail, has all the features on day one.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But I think this is going to happen slowly. I think that the Play Music app is going to stick around for a really long time. And I think that they're not going to start pushing people over until we see feature parity. And I think that maybe on the marketing and advertising side, they're going to start pushing YouTube Music as their music streaming service before Play Music actually shuts down. That would be my guess here.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, I think the end game would be, okay, we've established this service. Maybe YouTube Music won't even be successful and things will change completely down the line. Who knows? But assuming YouTube Music is successful, that's when I could see Google start to phase out Play Music. And maybe by that time, they'll be ready to start deconstructing this entire Play brand. I don't know. This is all it's informed speculation, I think. And it's just, us trying to make the best guess and interpretation of what's going on. But we were told that internally, the part of what's informing the speculation is that internally there was a response to these rumors where Google basically said that the current version of YouTube Music that's being tested internally is not going to be the one that actually replaces Google Play Music as a whole, and that Google Play Music isn't going to go away anytime soon. So I wouldn't take that as a debunk to say that, Google Play Music isn't shutting down, which the ideal plan and the internal roadmap may very well be a transition away from Play Music. But I also think that it does mean, and I think it makes sense that the Play app is not just going to see it be shut down this week at I/O or anything. I think that Play Music is probably here for a while until, like I said, until Google has really established YouTube Music and brought all the features over so that all of, like you said, all of their diehard users don't feel like they're missing out and just jump ship over to one of the very, may I say, very popular competitors.
And let's look at precedent, like Inbox. Google said that it's still getting an update to the iPhone for the iPhone X. Like, Google has shown that updating is still something they're willing to do, even as they maybe possibly wind down services.
Yep, totally. I think that's a good parallel to make, is that Inbox, I think, is also doomed. I think it's also going to be shut down in the next year or two. I think it's just going to reach end of life for support. But I don't think that means that Google's just going to stop, caring in the meantime. All of these transitions, usually transitions away from products, it's really quick to see a new product be announced. If you go to a press event or something, oh, we've never heard of this product before. Google showed it on stage. Okay, now this is their new product. But when Google's transitioning, or any company, I think, really, is, getting rid of a product or moving on from a product, it's usually, I think, a slower death before companies really pull the plug, because they don't want to cause any, they don't want the anyone who's paying customer to have a jarring experience and have something, have a product, like have the rug pulled out from under them, you know? So yeah, I think Inbox
and Google of all companies has a bad history, and they've definitely learned from their past mistakes to just not kill products, to have a plan, have a transition plan for the loyal customers.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that they've learned from the whole reader situation.
rest in peace, reader. As we mentioned above, podcasts, Google had a really big media push with podcasts. So it was this service, this site called Pacific Content. They had an exclusive with the Google Podcast team. So the first few days of stories were basically about how Google Assistant can now remember your progress across devices, and also how the company recently redesigned the Google app with a dedicated podcast experience with a home screen with the ability to subscribe. In our teardowns, we've seen how Google's working on the ability to download podcasts and store them for offline. So those are all the features now. But Google, in this interview, they have such a broad vision for podcasts, and it's honestly so exciting because they see podcasts as another, they see audio as another thing that can be used for search results, for text. So like, if you think about it, so we're moving into this assistant heavy voice interface feature, and while Google can answer questions, sometimes Google doesn't have that knowledge. So one idea that was thrown around this week was using clips from podcasts to directly give you answers in search results and for assistant replies, which is honestly really clever if you think about it. We're in a golden age of podcasts, and if Google can transcribe every single podcast, apply semantic analysis, and index it, they have free, up-to-date news-like answers at their resource, and that could really make podcasts, could really make assistants so much useful in a very good competitive advantage. What do you think as a podcast owner, as both of us are podcasters officially?
Well, I think that you should go over to the Google app right now and search Alphabet Scoop, and I think you should subscribe. Seriously, though, I think I think it's really, really cool to see that Google is taking podcasts seriously, because they haven't for several years. I mean,
yeah, they totally bungled it with Play Music. Like, everybody thought podcasts and Play Music was going to be a big push, but it's as dead as Play Music itself.
Yeah, what's funny is if you go into the podcast dashboard, I mean, I know because we had to publish this podcast on Play Music, which I guess you should subscribe there too if you want. But on the dashboard or something, I can't remember exactly, and it would take me a minute to pull it up, but the dashboard has like the old Google Play logo from like 2012 or something like that. Like,
oh gosh, yeah, I saw that email too. Yeah. They haven't touched it.
Yeah, it's just a mess. And the dashboard too for updating like podcast details and stuff is buggy. Like, just trying to update something, it just throws errors all the time. And, it's just a mess. And the experience is terrible. So I'm just really glad to see, how Google's handling podcasts with this new podcast app. And I think that hopefully it will become more and more feature complete, as the, you know, coming months, coming years go on. I mean, one feature that I think Google really needs in podcasts to compete, I guess, with Apple, and one thing that would really help us out a lot is a rating system. Like iTunes has, you know, star ratings, and people can leave entire reviews. Some people have, shameless plug again, if you want to go leave us a review on iTunes, that'd really help us out. And yeah, hopefully you can also in the future leave us a review in the Google app podcasts, because I think that would be really great for discoverability and stuff like that. So
yeah, and like search ranking, that's that has to factor in somehow in the podcast directory. It's so exciting. Again, like just talking about this, all these possible ideas keep coming to my mind. That podcast and audio, it it's so tightly integrated with smart assistants and speakers that the future is so bright here, and I'm really glad that Google is doubling down seriously here.
Yeah, I completely agree. What else do we have in app news this week, Abner?
So let's start with Google switching the gun emoji. This was highly, highly contentious on the internet when Google announced that they're switching from a realistic-looking revolver to a water pistol. This move matches Apple. They did this in 2016, I believe. They switched from an actual realistic gun to a it's either a water pistol or a laser gun or something. But this year, everybody started following. Samsung, Twitter, Microsoft, just after Google announced they're switching, is also changing. And basically, the idea is that since Apple is such a big player, to enforce consistency with the standards, all these companies have to follow suit. But there's such a large contingent that would wish that Google stuck to their guns. That's horrible and unintentional, but that they would stick to their... I don't know, I'm just digging deep into a hole here. That they would just be resolute with their own design style, not follow Apple. And it's, again, it's just so contentious and honestly a bit toxic, the conversations, because everybody is so passionate about this. I did not expect this when I wrote the post, but then again, blobs, that's all I have to say about that. And in other app news, YouTube Kids specifically, is adding human-curated channel collections for younger children and more parental restrictions. And this is to answer a big critique of YouTube's algorithms failing this human-created, curated approach, which I think we honestly might be seeing more of. As we see the limits of what AI can do at this current stage. And that is the big app news of the week.
There's one more story I wanted to touch on. It went up just this afternoon as we were preparing for this podcast. You and Dylan did a teardown of Google App 8.1 beta, which adds the Pixel Launcher's at-a-glance widget to other Android phones.
Yeah, this is an interesting application of Google designed in the Pixel to other products. What do you think about it?
I just think it's really great for anyone that doesn't have a Pixel phone, because this at a glance widget thing on the Pixels is like one of my favorite like features, or one of my favorite little touches that Google added to its. We talk about all the time how Google Android is not stock Android, so we'll call it Google Android. It's one of my favorite features. I love that it shows, you know, the like calendar events and on the home screen. I also just like being able to tap on that widget to pull up the weather or the calendar. I think it's great that people who own a Galaxy S9 or whatever other device they have that runs Android can try this out. I think it's still in beta.
Definitely.
And I already saw some people on Reddit complaining about how it doesn't really work as well as they would hope. I think it's a great feature. And it is interesting though to see that Google's opening this up, because a lot of things they keep close to the chest with Pixel specific features, like the Pixel Launcher, for instance.
Honestly, you're right. It's interesting. When you're inside baseball, when you're writing things, you're so into it and you can't really think about the grander scheme until the very end, until you take a second to breathe. But anyways, the more I think about it, this is Google making a case that with all the knowledge it knows about you, that it can deliver useful experiences. In a way, it's trying to convince consumers to like go back to Google, to keep using Google services and what their and to see how the integration really does work. If you use Google Calendar, if you use this Google app, you use this widget, it's them offering a centralized experience to other useful to other users. And it's a bit of a Trojan horse, the Pixel experience, if you really think about it and take it to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you have Samsung and other OEMs, but especially Samsung, who are constantly trying to fight their users to only use the Samsung proprietary, you know, apps and stuff. So,
Bixby.
Yeah, exactly.
Bixby.
On that note, I don't know how it's related, but in the weeks ahead, Google I.O. is coming up, as we've talked about a lot this week, as we mentioned already. I don't know if we formally mentioned this, but the Google I.O. 2018 app came out this week. So if you want to get a look at the schedule of events, if you want to check out what speakers you might want to see, check out a map of the grounds. I just think that's a great way to do that. You can get the app on the Play Store for free. Check that out. It has a lot of, quote, Material Design 2 kind of inspirations in there. So you can get a good idea of that. And you can also set up your schedule and, figure out the plan if you're going to be at I.O. If you're going to be at I.O. and you want to hang out with Abner and I, feel free to send us a message on Twitter or something and get in touch with us. And we'll try and hang out and chat with as many people as we can. If anyone's interested in us, we're not that important, but we'd be glad to meet anyone who's a fan of the podcast or has been listening. This is our 7th episode. So yeah, we're just planning to keep on doing this. And speaking of that, upcoming next week, we have a prediction show, right?
Yeah. So, next Friday, it'll be 4 days till the I.O. keynote on Tuesday. So we are going to do a prediction show, but we'd also love it if you guys and gals were to, in the comments of this week's post, give us your predictions. What do you want to see at I.O.? What are you excited about? What products you want to see updated? So be sure to chime in, and we'll talk about the most popular ones that we see.
Yep, and after the keynote, we will be doing a special edition of the podcast Tuesday or Wednesday. Not exactly sure. We haven't figured out the details on that, but it's going to be Abner and I and our boss, Seth Weintraub. We're all going to be at I.O. We're going to be recording a podcast basically talking about everything Google announced, all the implications, what everything means, what you need to know, and what we think about it. So be sure to tune in for that. And until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning, except for Google I.O. week, which we'll be publishing in the middle of the week. And you can find us on all of your favorite podcasting platforms, as mentioned, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google App Podcasts, Google Play, and you can even listen on our site and 9to5google.com if that's the way you would prefer. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks again for joining me, Abner, for our 7th episode, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.